Hey, everybody. Tim and Trudy, after class, thank you for joining us as we talk about Sunday's lesson. The first five, it was the first of five, I think is something that I called it.
First five of 10.
First five of 10, yeah, because there's going to be 10 laws. We're going to do the second five next week, but this week. And the thing is, when we originally did this, it took us 4.5 weeks to do these first five.
I don't know how that is. What is the world that we talk about for so long?
There is so much.
Yeah.
And as I said right at the end, I could have gone down a rabbit hole with so many things because there is a lot. But I think we got the basics here. And what I was really hoping was that in trying to get the basics that I didn't, that I explained enough that everything made sense. I was trying to make it make sense and get the full picture of what these principles are all about.
Yeah, and this is probably one of those series where you just listening to it one time through isn't going to be enough to make it stick. Because we go at a pretty fast pace because we don't have a ton of time, but we also don't want to stretch it out forever either. So this is probably one of those series that it would be a good idea to go back and re-listen to a lesson or two, because there is so much here, and hearing it once isn't going to help you put it into practice well.
Yeah. And that, and also the other thing that was happening in this lesson was I was saying some things that normally I may have even done a blank for, you know, done something on the handout for, but I just felt like we had so many blanks to begin with and that you just can't get everything. We were talking about the five laws, the five principles, all based off of kind of what you did a couple weeks ago, that good relationships require these good boundaries. Mm-hmm. If you don't have good boundaries in place, and we've talked about that for a couple of weeks. So the principles, starting with the first one, my actions have consequences, sowing and reaping, planting, harvesting, and that the consequences, a lot of time we think, parents will make the mistake that the consequence is, I'm going to yell at you. The consequence is, dad's getting mad. Yeah. The consequence is, I'm going to count to five. actual real consequence other than the fact that mom and dad get mad.
And you mentioned it, but what you end up training your child to do is monitor mom and dad's emotion. It's not about obedience anymore. It's all about monitoring mom and dad's emotion and how to keep that in a certain place. Unless I want to have a little fun and watch them get really mad because I think it's funny, and then I'll really tick them off.
And I've heard that in the workplace as well, when employers make it about, you know, well, we don't want to make the boss mad.
Yeah.
That shouldn't be what the boss wants.
Yeah.
As an employer, as a parent, as whoever, you want people to do the right thing.
Right. The boss will never get the kind of feedback he really needs if everybody's just afraid of saying anything because we don't want to tick him off or touch on his insecurity or touch on his pride or whatever.
So that's where we talked about relational, real consequences. The example which I took from the book about the parent who jumps in at the last minute to help Johnny out with their project because they didn't remember to get glue, and now it's, and in the material, he uses the good example of a parent who responds to that by saying, you know, you need glue. Why do you need glue? Well, I have this project due tomorrow. Well, what kind of teacher calls a student this time of night and demands they do this? Well, mom, it was 2 weeks ago. Oh, well, you know, I'm sorry. Okay. I don't have any glue and it's past my bedtime. And man, I really hope you do well. But
yeah. But how many parents do you think really would do that? I agree. I think it's a few that would actually see the health benefit of that. I just think we're so ingrained in, if I can help you, I'll help you. Mm-hmm. And so we do.
Mm-hmm. And especially more true of those that have that kind of bent towards helping.
Yeah. I don't think it's, and we mentioned this in last week's after class, I don't think we stop long enough to look we're looking at the here and now. We're looking at how is this going to impact us today and tomorrow. We don't really look at how is this choice that we're making right now going to impact this child 5 years from now. We don't look at that often enough.
Yeah, and that actually was a thing from the book, that this has to do with your future.
Yeah.
Has to do with the future of your child, has to do with the future of your relationship.
Yeah. We have to love our children enough to look at that and make that part of our thinking process.
Yeah.
And not the immediate here and now of their happiness or their comfort.
Yeah, and well, I'll go on. We talked about some consequence tips, because people say, well, what kind of consequences should I have? How do I set consequences? They should fit the crime. One thing I didn't mention, you know, that we mentioned before, is you got to differentiate between a felony and a misdemeanor. You know, you can't fit every boundary problem as if it's the end of the world.
Yeah.
Some are just, okay, you made a mistake. We'll fix it. We'll move on. Mm-hmm. Some are really important because of, again, of the future.
Your which character.
Character.
Mm-hmm.
And got to be compassionate.
Yeah, I liked what you said about anger and, you know, mature people don't blame. Mature people are going to recognize this anger is about me and resolve to address that and not make that I'm mad and it's your problem. It's your fault that I'm mad.
And I would
that goes with everything. Kids, parents, husband, wife, boss, employee, neighbor.
And I would say that's something that I'm working on, because, I mean, just here, that was a point for me recently when I was angry about something and I stopped and went, okay, what's this telling you about you?
It's hard to do.
This is telling you nothing about the other person. You know you disagree with the other person, but what's it telling about you, and what do you need to do with that?
Yeah, I can remember telling one of my kids, because I think I, especially when we were younger, earlier in marriage and raising kids, I think I had a harder time with anger than you did. You were a slower boil, maybe. I don't know. You're looking at me like, I don't know. But anyway, I can remember telling my kids on more than one occasion, I am angry right now, but you're not in charge of my anger. You know, I didn't want them trying to accommodate me because I'm mad. You know, it just was too important to me. Sometimes you got to give me a little space because I am angry, and then we'll reconvene and we'll address this. But, you know, I might need a little space, but I didn't want them thinking they were in charge of monitoring my anger. I never wanted that as a parent.
Yeah. Law two, responsible for myself. You talked about this a couple weeks ago. I didn't want to spend a whole long time on that.
Which reminds me, what I wish you would do on next week's handout is you had the law name on the screen, but they aren't on the paper. I wanted to see them on the paper. I want to connect the law name with how you're explaining it.
Yeah, and the only reason I didn't do that was for space.
You have space. You can make it.
I felt like there was a lot on the handout.
No, there may be, but it's not a blank. I don't need it as a blank, but I want it on there to know what that law number one was equating to and what that law number two was equating to, for me.
I'm responsible for myself, law of responsibility for myself and to others. I think for me, kind of the thing that stood out for me was the difference between unable and uncomfortable. That our responsibilities are our responsibilities, even when they're hard. And so law three, law of power, which is I can't do it all, but I'm not helpless either. And we went through that. Law four, I'm not the only one who matters. That's the law of respect, that we have to respect others' boundaries. You know, it's pretty easy to say, yeah, this feels good to be able to say no. It feels good to be able to protect my territory. Well, other people think the same thing. And it's easy to, well, I'm going to protect my territory, but it's okay if I trespass on yours.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, don't walk on my grass, but hey, if I got to walk on yours, no problem.
I have a reason that I have to. Yeah. I'm in a hurry.
I have a better reason. Yeah, my reasons are always better than whatever you're, you know, I'm, yeah.
Yeah, and you made the comment, no such thing as passive-aggressive love, no such thing as passive-aggressive respect. And yet so many times it's that passive aggressive element that is here because they either feel guilt, they either feel anger or fear, because they're not going to communicate directly, kindly, but directly. So they'll do it indirectly, sarcastically, whatever. And that's just a good element to remember there, is that's not an element of love or respect.
Yeah. And so I was not passive aggressive. I came out and directly said it.
Oh, yeah. I was shocked that you would say that in class. Not that it was bad or wrong.
You haven't said what I said. I haven't said what I said.
Yes, you did. Go right ahead.
I said, parents.
If you made them mad the first time, you're going to make them mad a second time.
Parents do their children and themselves, their marriage, no favors at all when they let their children sleep in their bed.
Yeah.
Again, that's a boundary that there may be a time, you know, especially your child's
Somebody's sick.
Yeah. That's the one I think of. Your child's sick.
I had a puking kid in bed with me.
Yeah. And okay.
Got to keep an eye on things.
Right. And their bed's too small to keep an eye on them. So that's fine. That happens. But when it becomes a repeated pattern, when it becomes a thing where okay.
And it's a pattern the child is controlling.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Then it's a problem.
Yeah. And I was surprised you mentioned it. And it was funny because it was all had to do with those fear of this, fear of that, because most of the parents that I know that do that are not acquaintances. They're people that I've read about what they have to say about it. And boy, they will defend that almost more than they will their salvation. It's a strong held belief. And by golly, they're right about it. So I just challenge any parent to be willing to examine your reason and your motivation and your intent behind that. You know, because I think there's a difference between wanting your child to feel secure and having your child feel in control. And sometimes we give the message to our child that you aren't safe unless you're with me. You aren't secure unless you're with me. And that gets reinforced over and over and over. Mm-hmm. But I really think it's feeding a need in the parent more than it is a need in the child. And it all goes back to not setting healthy boundaries that will help them in the future as they keep moving forward. You know, and too many times you've got parents, and you've seen them, we've seen them, where they have the kids determining the family agenda. They've got the kids setting the emotional temperature of the home. They allow the kids to determine the volume of the home. And those poor kids have an awful lot of control in the home that isn't to their benefit. It's not to any future relationship benefit, but the parents they feel helpless or impotent to make that change. And they're the only ones who can.
Mm-hmm. It's like saying, okay, 3-year-old, you're going to be the CEO of this company.
Mm-hmm.
That's not only a lot of control, that's a lot of responsibility.
Yeah.
Now you've given all the responsibility to this child who they don't deserve that.
Yeah. And you end up blaming the outcome on them too.
Yeah. And it's the helicopter parenting of, I'm so fearful of what could happen. Plus the fact of it feels good to be needed.
Right. I was just about to say that. They need me. They need me.
Feels good to be wanted.
To not give them.
Right.
And to fill this need. I said, but I want them to, I mean, your purpose isn't to grow up and get rid of your kids, but I want my kids to grow up and be independent, that they can function without having to run to me every 5 minutes, because that's unhealthy for them. That's exhausting for them. But it brings you a great relationship when they're adults, when they have been,
when they're responsible, separate adults.
And they have healthy boundaries in that. Your relationships will be so much better with your children.
Mm-hmm.
So much better when they're adults. If you recognize some of these areas where, you know, you're not maybe doing that as healthy as you should.
You want responsible individuals that you can have a relationship with. So there's that. Law five, the ability to say yes depends on the freedom to say no. That's the law of motivation.
Yeah. And that one I kind of stopped. It was hard for me a little bit in the back because I've got a lot going on sometimes back there. And I was almost, I wish I could go back and listen to how you said it because it, my brain was saying, you know, you tell me, you explain that law and let me, you tell me what your emphasis was on that.
I think there's
about the difference between yeses and noes that we're giving.
Yeah. I think there's a couple of things. One is that it's the motivation when you think about saying yes. We cover a lot about saying no, but when you say yes, you have to ask yourself, what's your motivation for that? Why did you say yes? Why are you, okay, so for instance, the parent who is always doing, the example of the book was, there was a mom who was, you know, I give and I give and I give and I just, it just depresses me.
Nobody appreciates
me and all of this. And so you have to step back and say, well, why were you doing that? I understand, you know, sometimes serving can be tiring. So I get the tiring part of that. That's not the problem. The problem is when we feel like we have to, when we feel like there's no freedom. Well, I had to say yes. I had to give. I had to serve. My motive, and you say, well, why did you have to? Well, and then you have all these false motives. Well, because they were going to get mad if I didn't. That they were going to, something bad was going to happen if I didn't, you know, step in. They would, and you have all these other things, other than the fact of, well, I love them. And that's, you know, if it's coming out of love, then it's not a have to. I had a choice. I could have said no.
Yeah, as long as they recognize that. I think that's where the water muddy, wait, the water gets muddy, is if they think my answer always has to be yes because of love. You have to be able to know, I can say no, but I'm choosing to say yes.
Yeah, and that was one thing, one of the false motives, I was talking about false motives. We say yes because we feel, they'll get angry or they'll get disappointed or they'll have hurt feelings or we're seeking approval, or a false motive is that we believe that love always says yes.
Yeah, that's a
and
biggie.
Love doesn't always say yes. Love sometimes says no.
Yeah, that's exactly what Yahweh does with us and how he loves us. It's not always a yes.
And when he says no, it's not because he can't.
Right.
He always can.
Right.
But sometimes for his purposes, he says no. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that part of the original sin in the garden was because they could say no. Because God wanted to give them the ability to love him. And if he had taken away that choice, there wouldn't have actually been love there. So,
yeah. And sometimes saying yes isn't just for the things that I want to do. Mm-hmm. You know, we're choosing to say yes.
Yes.
You know, sometimes it's not even something that I want to do, but I'm saying yes because it's the right thing to do.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because we always, when we teach on love, what do we always say love is? Love is a choice. Mm-hmm. And that choice includes being able to say nope, or being able to say yes. And then I also took it to mean, you know, when we set boundaries for children or grandchildren, the motivation should be love. We should produce those limits because we love them, not because of fear that they won't like us or fear that whatever. It's that I have your best in mind. I'm looking to your future. And these are why I'm setting those limits. Those are the first five.
Well, it's a good lesson. A lot to take in, though. That's why I say, man, go back and listen again because there's a lot of stuff to take in.
Yeah, I got to the end there. If you create boundaries out of fear, those boundaries will be fear-based. And fear-based boundaries are always a problem.
Yeah. And the thing is, I keep going back to do these things well while they're young mm-hmm. and in your home so that they are able to do these things well when they get in relationships. Because so many relationships are just a mess, and it goes back to they didn't learn these critical things, or they learned them incorrectly when they were mm-hmm. young yeah. and in the home.
Yeah, and we don't realize what effect that has, even yeah. as adults, you know, on our choices and the emotions that we're trying to manage.
Yeah.
So next week, you won't be there, but
I won't.
I'll be there.
You'll be there. I'll be in France.
And we'll do the other five principles, laws of boundaries. And we hope you be there. We'll see you then.